All right. Well, for everybody on the call, thanks for joining. Good afternoon. Good morning if you're in the West Coast. It is Thursday, November 16th, and welcome to the Security in 45 show. No slides, just conversation. That's our motto for the show. Each episode of the show does cover a different security challenge in the industry, and we talk about how to protect users' devices from those challenges. Now, last session was awesome. We talked about XDR and what that means, and then we also talked about Cisco XDR. That recording and all the recordings are available on cisco.com, making it easy to get caught up if you missed anything. Andres, for today, what is on the agenda?
Oh, we have a really nice session today. Very excited to get to talk about user and endpoint protection. This one feels like it's connected to the previous one on XDR, so very happy that we can do that connection as well here. But yeah, today we're joined by two super special guests. Chad Bui, he's known as the Iceman here in the team. He has a really good, great background on Cisco ICE. And then we also have Eric Howard. He's a leader and technical manager for the Security Platform and Response Group. Hopefully, I got that right. And we're super excited to have you guys. At the end, I want to make sure that I mention this. At the end, we have a feedback section that as soon as you close Webex, it's going to ask you a few questions. This is going to be a survey. Just make sure that you fill it out. We're with all the participants or everybody that fills it out. We're going to make sure that we select one winner for a really nice Cisco hoodie.
And I like that hoodie. First off, I'm super pumped about our guest, Eric. Long time. It was great getting to catch up with you about your background coming from FireAmp and SourceFire, and just a lot going on there in terms of technical depth. Chad, I've known you for so many years, all the way back to the TAC days, specializing in Cisco ISE, and now just being on a general security team. quick question about the hoodie. It is starting to get a little cold here in North Carolina. Am I eligible for the Cisco hoodie?
No, Mike, this is just for the audience. Just make
All
sure.
right. Well, I had to ask. We got two great guests on the show in only 45 minutes, so let's kick it off. And Eric, I'll give you the first one here. You've got a lot of strong background, a lot of different areas in security. Now, specific to the endpoint, can you talk about what you have seen and your experience about protecting the endpoint and kind of how that's evolved over time?
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for the opportunity. Intro was great, Andres, except for the manager part. I'm not leading a team anymore. I'm back to being an individual contributor, and so I'm actually pretty cool with that. But right, so I've been in security for a little while now, and I've seen a few things change. If we think back to several years ago, where even the motivation behind a lot of attacker stuff was vastly different, whether it was people that had a political message, right, wanted to hack a site and post a message like free Tibet or something like that, or it was just I want to knock a network offline, whatever the case might be. There wasn't as much. Certainly, look at today, ransomware, reasons to get at data, holding things hostage, money behind it. So the motivations have greatly changed for many who are now involved in attacking networks. The reason why they're doing it is different. And that motivation also drives innovation, right? It's not enough to just knock a network off the internet, but I want to be able to do something that gives me continued access to the systems that that are going to then be valuable to me as an attacker. That then means that I, as a defender, have to be innovative also in what I do. In the days of SQL Slammer, if that was the major threat, right, all I really had to do was drop an ACL in a router. And if I had a simple packet filter firewall, I could block access to a particular port of traffic coming into my network. Shut it down there, my network settles down, and things begin to really kind of normalize themselves. Different day now, right? That ton of traffic, the DDoS stuff, while it's still there, most attackers are going to be very stealthy and very targeted. They know what they want, they know how to get it, and they know how to slip in amongst the normalcy of traffic in an environment. And if they can just get a toehold, that's all they need to make their pivots into gaining a foothold for persistence, to ultimately capture data or systems that are valuable to an enterprise. And so it's innovation that's been somewhat driven by attackers that has made us as defenders have to level up. Some of it has been whack-a-mole over the years, right? They do this, we do that. They do this, we do that. I think we've reached a point where we're thinking now as defenders, there are better ways to ensure that we are preparing ourselves to get the visibility our customers will need, or analysts or users will need, so that no matter what pivot an attacker might take, the products that our analysts are tasked to use to defend an organization, users, and systems, that those products are ready for those new pivots. There will always be new and novel attacks, but there are ways, if we understand the systems and networks and environments and users that we're tasked to protect, there are ways that we can get ahead of that. And so that now comes into systems that now do things like behavior analysis, not just looking at what landed on the system, but what does the execution chain look like? What's the process chain lineage from one process to another? What command line flags are used for execution? And how does that then turn around to point out attacker motivation, which then should inform how we do containment, remediation, and et cetera. So it's ever changing. It will continue to change. And I think we may even get into this in a couple questions later. There are some things I think we can do to better prepare ourselves for the changes that nobody can guess about.
Excellent. And I guess it definitely becomes more difficult too with like the larger threat surface we have to protect from too. Like, as you mentioned, the attackers are getting smarter and they also have probably, I guess, more availability to areas that they could attack in the network.
Yeah. So I was privileged to speak and at a summit a few weeks ago in Boston, and I didn't argue this point heavily, but I just kind of planted a seed with a question of what really is an endpoint, right? What really is an endpoint? Depends on who you ask. Certainly there are, you know, the devices that all of us have in our day-to-day work, the laptops that we use, they're the servers that host data or we need to connect to deliver some outcome. But they're also, you know, the devices that we love and keep on us every single minute of the day, many of us, the things that are always connected and have surfaces that are not even well understood in some cases. But I would even say that, you know, there are other systems that are not necessarily considered an endpoint, but in terms of an attacker's operational space are absolutely endpoints. Consider some of the things around the iOS vulnerability, right? That was announced just a few weeks ago for Cisco, not iOS on the iPhone, iOS, Cisco iOS, where routers could be toppled and used for attacker purposes. And so then that device, which is supposed to just be passing bits back and forth, can be offering services, TFTP services, staging for pivot points, et cetera. There is a command line there that can be used and abused. And so that becomes an endpoint at some perspective in attacker's operational space that has to be considered. How you farm for data out of that endpoint might be different than the Windows or Mac or Linux devices that we all typically call an endpoint. But everything in some perspective in the attacker's operational space is an endpoint if they can get a hold to it and use it to their advantage.
Excellent. That's
absolutely right. Yeah. And that was actually really good that we got into it. We talked about that, the guacamole piece. That's pretty cool analogy. Now, for the next question I have, it's for you, Chad. And just wanted to ask you how, from what you've seen in the industry, how successful have been the bad guys, what we call them, for endpoint-specific attacks recently?
Question. They've been extremely successful, very successful, and they are continuing to work on their craft, which keeps us busy, keeps us in the business, and on the defensive side to making sure we have the protection in place to stop them or at least slow them down. But as Eric said, it's an ongoing battle. They are continuing to find different tactics and techniques they can use to leverage these vulnerabilities within solutions. And then specifically when we're talking ransomware, ransomware is at an all-time high right now. And I know a few of us, if not all of us, are familiar with the Colonial Pipeline attack, and we're also familiar with the MGM attack that took place this year. And in terms of MGM, they thought they had the right pieces in place. They thought they were doing things the right way with MFA. But as I said, these malicious actors are getting creative. And within the MGM attack, they were able to phone into a help desk and impersonate an admin to get their credentials reset. So again, this you can you think you have everything in place when you deploy software out to these machines, but it's a lot more involved than that. We have to educate the users, the employees, because this was a layer eight issue. The software was in place, but the people who are in charge of making sure things are working as they should were somewhat slipping. They were unaware of what was going on, and that opened the door for an attacker to get in. That attack cost MGM millions of dollars. So the attackers are extremely successful, and again, it's keeping us busy on the defensive side, but it's something that we also have to do. We also have to continue to get better on the defensive side so that we're able to better protect ourselves and patch these vulnerabilities. So yes, to answer your question, extremely successful.
Yeah, they're getting very creative with everything that, is coming up. And I know Eric mentioned that as well. It is always a zero day. It is always something new. It is always something that evolves in that space. So that's good. Thank you for that answer, man.
Eric, anything you want to add in that point about specifically some of how the success of these attacks? I know I love to gamble, so I really hope that that type of attack's not happening when I'm at MGM. But I know that was a joking aside. That was a $100 million breach there.
Yeah, no, not a ton to add. I think Chad covered it well. One thing I will say, this is kind of a known thing, right? That we're defenders, and as defenders, we tend to have, we lean into the fact that we have to be right 100% of the time, right? We need to be accurate with what we're doing. We need to ensure that we are doing it well, that our processes line up with the programs that run inside of our organization, and that the systems that we are tasked to protect are using software that will work there. The attacker's only got to be right once. And that kind of, working in that kind of environment can become a thing that weighs on you, like, man, no matter what I do, I could still miss something. And so, but right, that also builds in a great challenge for us as defenders. Like, it gives me a chance to think about this. Like, if they're successful, why are they successful? Was it a product issue or was it a process issue? Either way, I can address both, right? If it's a process issue, we do the work, tabletop exercises, whatever the case might be, to make sure that that process doesn't fail me in the future. If it's a product issue, I bring in the teams, the vendors, whomever's necessary to say, this is how this happened. We can't have that have this happen again. How do we correct this? What's the course correction we need to bring to bear? But we still go to work with the fact that I got to be right 100% of the time today, because the 1% that the attacker is right and I'm wrong is $100 million. That's crazy. I mean, to your point, Mike, I was trying to book some time at MGM when that thing was going on. And before I even knew that there was something real going on, I'm just like, why is this so hard? What's happening? Why can't I log into like my MGM app on my phone and book a room or something like that? Got to be right 100% of the time. But that is also the inspiring thing that gives us work to do as defenders, that all there's always more space to get better. And so rather than have that weigh on us, right, it should inspire us as defenders that I can always be better. They're going to be better. I can be better. So.
Sure. Now, in terms of keeping, everyone detecting threats, and especially these really successful threats that have a lot of social engineering and have maybe spread laterally, when I think about stuff like that, I think about like the MITRE ATT&CK framework. How important is the MITRE ATT&CK framework? Kind of high level, what is it? And how can we use that to defend against these well-funded criminal groups?
Yeah, great question. I think that was for me. If not,
That was for
I
you,
certainly
Eric.
got thoughts on it if it was.
Yeah, that's all you.
So I like to say, and I'm sure I'm not alone in this, and I'm probably not the first one to say it, but I like to say that the MITRE ATT&CK framework has become the lingua franca of security, right? It is the common language that helps us connect the dots between what adversaries need to do and why they want to do it, and what defenders should be doing and how they can be successful against those same adversaries, right? It is a way to describe how an attacker's motivation and the steps they take to achieve their desired goals. As a defender, I can use that to my advantage if I understand why an attacker does what they do. So, I am one who leans heavily into the field of thought that we should not become incredibly preoccupied with particular techniques, right? There are hundreds of techniques in the MITRE ATT&CK framework. And what a technique is a simple description of the steps an attacker will take to achieve something that they want. That achieving point is a tactic. It is what I need to get done. I want to elevate privileges. How do I elevate privileges? There are many techniques or ways or steps I can do to elevate my privileges on a system. So the tactic would be to elevate system privileges. The technique could be, right, getting the hashes out of Etsy password, or and running through rainbow tables to find weak dictionary style passwords, or pulling SAM hives, or whatever the case might be. There are many ways to achieve the tactic of a chain obtaining system privilege escalation. Many, many, many ways. What I would lean heavily into is that techniques are important, one, but your MITRE ATT&CK framework also presents this notion of how to instrument our environments, hosts, networks, cloud services, whatever the case might be, to watch for any technique, period. So if you go through the MITRE ATT&CK framework and you're looking at a particular technique, it'll tell you like the discovery sources, the data sources. And if you look at the data sources the right way, the data sources should give you the telemetry that can then be used to uncover the technique used. And so I think any defender that wants to use MITRE should start with that notion of what are the data sources? Because that then shows me two things. One, where am I blind? What am I not looking at in my environment or on my systems? What data sources am I not calling? What data sources am I not logging against? What data sources does my security stack miss? But then also shows me now what are the techniques I can catch, knowing what data sources I have available to me through the instrumentation of my security stack. And so that's where I like to lean. MITRE is incredible. It is a great way to explain what an attacker has done and even maybe attribute why they did so. But I like to see us as defenders use it primarily to get our users ready to make sure their networks are properly instrumented, no matter what a technique might be or which tactic an attacker might employ. I'm watching everything and I'm able to see what they did. Because at some point, I may not have the detection routines available described in some language at the network or on the endpoint, but I got the logs and I can run through that stuff and put the pieces together and tell the story. Data sources become critical when we look at MITRE as a framework from a defender standpoint.
And to add to that, I know a ton of our customers are thankful that we have tied in the MITRE framework into several of our security products. So if you're unfamiliar with those tactics, those techniques, and you are an endpoint customer, whenever there's an event that applies or is associated with a MITRE technique or tactic, it is right there in the dashboard. So you can go ahead and click on that and learn about it. So you now have an understanding of this tactic, this technique. And then we continue to do that with our NDR solutions, network analytics. We are tying this together just so we can keep everyone informed on the MITRE ATT&CK framework.
That's actually really good. It opens up so many things, so many opportunities from the MITRE framework, just to how to look into an attack, into something that is happening in your network. Pretty cool. I guess the next one is gonna be interesting because we're taking that information, the same information we just talked about, and this question is more about what is, and this is for you, Chad, and Eric, at the end, if you want to add something, of course, but what is that protection beyond the endpoint? And I know we mentioned it earlier, further upstream of the network, cloud layers, how important is that endpoint security for us, for a company? What do you think?
Got you. So, when it comes to like upstream protection, a layered approach is necessary. It is necessary. I know with a security stack, there are some features that may overlap with different security solutions, but that's there for a purpose. We all have a firewall in place that may be inspecting that north-south traffic. You may have a firewall inside your network, doing some east-west inspection. You have your email security solution that is inspecting emails that come in, but there are things that make it, there are attacks that make it through those security measures. And that's why it's super important to have that layered approach. There are times I've talked to customers who maybe are thinking, I don't need the file inspection on my firewall. I have it on my endpoint. I think you need both. It goes back to like what Eric said. An endpoint is not just your PC, your laptop, your phone, tablet. Endpoint extends out to the IoT devices, so a thermostat, a printer. And those devices, you're not able to deploy an EDR solution to. So you're not able to perform the same checks, the same inspection of that traffic on those type of devices. So that is where you have that layered approach. You have maybe an NDR solution inspecting that east-west traffic. That's why you have a security stack that is tightly integrated and on the same page. So if your EDR solution sees malicious, suspicious activity, why don't we let our NAC solution lock down all the ports on that in that office across the environment worldwide? So that if for any chance that bad actor is able to get that agent off that PC, we have them protected at the access layer with a NAC solution. So going with a layered approach is super important and should not be overlooked just because, like I said, they're finding ways in. They're getting creative. They are constantly perfecting their craft and they will find a way in. So that way we want to have the right security measures in place to prevent that or stop it. Stop the bleeding as soon as we can.
Yeah, that was great. No, thank you for that.
That's a great point about something like a thermostat or a printer. Like that is just such a vulnerability waiting to happen if you were only reliant on an EDR. So you do want to have that upstream protection for that. I think that's what, Eric, to your point about getting in the mind of how the attackers are thinking, that I think they're thinking along those lines. Like there's even devices out there that are not being examined, don't have endpoint protection on them. If I could get to those because someone's not doesn't have layered security, then that's an easy way in.
Without a doubt. I mean, I called out a Cisco router, but to Chad's point, it is all of those little devices that when they wake up, they try to figure out where they are in the world by doing the DNS request to figure out, what am I talking to? Can I phone home? Is there a firmware update I need to install? All that kind of stuff. That means that there is some form of host that can be compromised there on those devices. I think Chad nailed it. Everything needs to be considered. And I don't want to push too far. I know you guys got another one of these coming up in about a week on XDR, but this talks about why you need something like XDR, a stack of both network and endpoint to really give visibility and broad protection. Although I do say, the endpoint is the last best hope, right, of defending the network. That doesn't mean it has to happen on the endpoint itself. It means that we need to think of everything as an endpoint that needs to be secured. And how we get the visibility we need could be, as Chad mentioned, in front of it, up the stream somewhere. I mean, services are being deployed in real time based on need to cloud services. Like on demand, I need to spin up extra resources to handle load. We're headed into the holidays, guys, right? Cyber Monday's coming. Nobody's running all that stuff in one data center. Nobody's building servers to plan for all of that stuff. They've got stuff that's watching to say when load increases, spin up new instances. Are you ready for that? Those are new endpoints that'll have to be secured and protected, maybe at the endpoint within the workload itself or just outside of it, but you still got to catch those new endpoints as they come online. So.
Yep.
Exactly.
Excellent. Now, Eric, if I'm, listening in to the four of us talking and I'm thinking, oh, there's a lot I need to secure, it's not just the users, but also the devices they're on. What recommendation or advice, you've been in the industry a long time, would you give to someone who maybe was recently tasked by their manager, hey, you're now on the security team. I want you to look into how we can begin to secure users and endpoints. Where do you even start?
It hasn't changed for me over the years, to be honest. So I used to talk a lot about network cartography projects. Do we have a simple map of what's in the network? Or do we have an understanding of not just the topology of the data center, but the flows of traffic? Have we been able to plot that to see what's normal? And when I say data center, I mean our cloud services, our own on-prem stuff, wherever the data lives, wherever the applications are presented, however users connect, right? Do we understand that? And this cartography project to me is a starting point. It comes from the thought that if I don't know it's there, if there are unknown unknowns, that's the most dangerous stuff to a defender because I can't defend what I don't know needs to be defended. And if I don't understand how it presents itself, I don't know the best means whereby to defend it. And so how you get there is going to be different based on organizations, right? I've seen customers and users do stuff like, network scans to try to hunt through their IP space and see what responds. That's not going to work everywhere. So I've seen them deploy passive discovery technology in other places that find new hosts that, you can't scan into or won't scan into certain environments. But start there. And nobody, I've talked to many customers and none of them tend to like their asset inventory software or spreadsheets, no matter what they've done. Everybody's got to complain about asset inventory. But if you don't have some sense of asset inventory, you're starting blind. You're starting blind. You don't know what policies to configure, how to configure them. You don't even understand the environment and the demands of it for protection. So I start there. No matter the size of the environment, if it's a big, huge enterprise, you got to take it chunk by chunk, segment by segment, maybe even office by office, region by region, continent by continent. But you've got to get some sense of mapping, be it active or passive, of what's there for me to protect. What's been talking to the internet? What has been receiving connections? And having a mapping of that begins to help me establish the baselines of normalcy, normal use of the network, and the sense of normalcy in terms of protections that I should deploy first. Most folks are going to start at the network layer. They're going to start with a firewall, maybe an IPS. They're going to start with some network detection pieces because it's just easier. I have choke points in the network where I can plug that stuff in. I can tell routers and switches to give me flows, right? That becomes easy to do. Great. Awesome place to start. Layer that over the network cartography project stuff and begin to say now at the endpoint layer, what are the vulnerabilities that are being presented and the posture of those assets that are making these connections out? Having a sense of vulnerabilities of operating systems and applications shows me how to deploy the protections in very specific ways. IPS, right? As an example, I used to tell the story. I would tell the firepower story along this sign of this analogy of a hole in a roof, right? You can have a hole in your roof, and that presents several areas of risk. What I do to cover that hole will determine what risk I can prevent. If I put a tarp over the hole in my roof, well, I can keep out precipitation for the most part. I may be able to keep out birds. I can keep out squirrels may, no, you'll never keep out squirrels. Squirrels will always find a way. Right?
Sure.
Insects will make their way in. I can put, chicken wire right over the hole. That won't do anything with precipitation. It might keep out some larger insects, maybe. Birds, again, squirrels will win, right? The right way to do it is to understand the nature of the vulnerability and then apply the appropriate fixes against that. It is to rip up all of the shingles, examine the paper, examine the plywood, and figure out how do we appropriately fix this thing without having it. And so that's why I start with the cartography project. What's really there? How does it present itself? And then with knowing the vulnerability to my network, because I know what's there, I can then apply controls in the best way. A tarp might be necessary for 3 days until I can get roofers out up there, but I got to know I probably got to chase a squirrel out of the house in those 3 days or something like that, right? Do I have branches hanging over the roof? Something's gonna get in, and I need to take care of that also. So cartography for me is where it starts. Understanding the assets, knowing what's there, how they present themselves, knowing how the applications are presented and what vulnerabilities are mapped there. And then lastly, the thing next to the endpoint, the user. Chad mentioned this, layer eight problem for MGM, right? What user protections can be put in place right away? That might even help in the gap between the network and the endpoint pieces. If I can roll out things like multi-factor authentication, if I can do some things that help the user helps me to ensure that they're not clicking links unnecessarily, that stuff that can help even as I'm taking the longer tail approach and making sure the endpoints are secured everywhere they are, no matter how they connect, doing things like VPN for access, zero trust as an architecture topology that lays across it. You've got a whole lot of stuff to consider. Start with understanding what you have to protect first and foremost.
Excellent. Yeah,
And to
you
add,
can't protect what you don't know is there. So go ahead,
absolutely
Chad.
not.
Exactly. And to add to that, being an ice guy, a NAC solution, super important, gives you that who, what, when, where, and gives you that visibility into what is on your network, using profiling to classify those devices, knowing that we have a user coming in on an Apple iPad versus a Windows 10 or Windows 11 workstation, tying that into vulnerability platforms with ThreatCentric NAC. Now we're able to apply vulnerability scores and quarantine these endpoints until we're able to patch those devices. So that's speaking my language when it comes to protecting these switch ports, protecting the wired and wireless environments, protecting the VPN connectivity. It's all protecting the endpoints along with the users.
That's really good. I love the analogy. Actually, just got me thinking a lot.
And so right about the squirrels, man.
Squirrels always win. I say that all the time. Squirrels always win. They will find a way.
Awesome, guys. All right. Next question I have is, I know Cisco launched something at the beginning of the month. I know we've internally been talking about it for a few weeks before that, but tell us a little bit about the user protection suite, Chad. I think I know we've been talking a lot about this, but if you want to expand a little bit on it, that'll be great for our listeners.
Yeah, sure. So yes, we have a few protection suites. So we have our user protection suite, our breach protection suite, and the cloud protection suite. But with the user protection suite, this is broken down into our unified license structure with using Essentials and Advantage. But in the Essentials user protection suite, that supplies you with our latest SSE offering being Secure Access. It gives you access to Duo for MFA, zero trust access for applications, single sign-on, email threat defense. With email threat defense, of course, everyone has a gateway that they're able to get visibility into those incoming, outgoing emails. But when you throw in a solution like email threat defense, now we get visibility into those internal messages. So we're seeing incoming, outgoing internal messages. And with email threat defense, what we're doing is able to look at the context of the message and actually understand the intent by leveraging AI. And we're able to apply those advanced analytics to stop threats that maybe your email gateway may miss. So it is complementary or supplemental to your existing email gateway. And then with our Advantage package, it includes those three solutions, but then we extend out to endpoint. As Eric mentioned, endpoint is that last line of defense. And then when you Couple that with something like secure access that has the DNS layer security. That is your first line of defense. So with our user protection suite, we're able to start you on your zero trust journey by protecting that first line with handling the DNS request, being able to stop a malicious connection from even happening. But also when we have attackers that are able to slip past that first line of defense, we have you covered with endpoint to cover you. That is our user protection suite. And again, it helps you get started on that zero trust journey.
Yeah, I've demoed some of these kind of, one plus one equal three things in the past. One of the ones I'll bring up that Chad just mentioned, right? There's cloud to cloud integration between Cisco Secure Endpoint and Duo right now. So for the user protection suite, you've got a great use case whereby if Cisco Secure Endpoint sees something on a host and it believes that host to be in a compromised state, the Duo Cloud gets that information immediately, and is able to change access permissions for that user on that device, so that if they were logging into O365, but Secure Endpoint has seen something that says that system's compromised, Duo will say, "Nope, you don't get to log in anymore. Shut it down." And once you've then resolved that in the endpoint cloud and set that case to done in the inbox, there's a workbox called the inbox. You've set that to a resolved state. That compromise has been addressed. Duo lets them authenticate as needed, right? So that you've got this multi-stage view all the way out to the user on a particular device and its state of compromise or non-compromise in the network. But again, that's cloud to cloud. That's not even having to have multiple connectors that you got to make work together. Just the clouds, because it's all Cisco, they work together and understand the state of the system, state of the user, and drive that outcome that I can have that first line of the first kind of dipping my foot into that zero access stance that this compromised device, this user on this compromised device can't get access to key critical resources that they could 5 minutes before. But once that state's resolved, they can proceed with their work.
I think that is such an important point, like that dynamic continuous verification, not just when they connected to the network, but Eric, like you said, like you accessed some type of malware after the fact, we caught it, and we're keeping an eye on things.
Yeah, we call it, so if you go to an amusement park, you must be this tall, right, to get on this ride. But who knows whether once you're on the ride, whether you've taken the safety bars off or wiggled your way out of them, taking the seat belt off, you're leaning out of the side of the car, whatever, right? So there's that initial assessment of you have access, but then there's the always watching, the visibility that's needed to say, hey, you got access because you're okay, but something's wrong now. I need to inform everything else that you shouldn't be allowed access anymore. So
Excellent, excellent. All right, well, we've only got one more question for you guys. Thank you so much for the topics. The interaction has been great. I want to make sure we do have time for the dad jokes, because that's, everybody loves the dad jokes. So I'll throw this one out there, maybe like a minute, maybe a minute and a half, just response. But this goes back to that user protection suite, Eric and Chad, and one of the products in that I've been waiting a long time for is the secure access product. So maybe if you could just elaborate just a little bit on Cisco Secure Access. We advertise that as a turnkey, solution. So I'll open it up maybe a minute and a half.
Yeah, Chad, I'll let you go. I'll come behind you.
All right, sounds good. So with SecureX, that is our latest SSE offering. The whole movement with SASE, with the convergence of networking and security, we are applying the security controls using secure access. So a lot of you may be familiar with Umbrella and the features that Umbrella has to offer. We've added those into SecureX. So, or, I'm sorry, into secure access. So with secure access, you get that DNS layer security for your users on and off the network. You have access to the cloud delivered firewall for layer 3, 4, 7 firewall rules. You have that secure web gateway, full web proxy for HTTP and HTTPS, your AD and 443 traffic. But then on top of that, you get the CASB functionality, application control and visibility. So all of those security solutions are all the security features are there to help extend security past your perimeter, past your edge. But what really sets Secure Access apart from Umbrella is now we have zero trust network access built in, where your users are not having to connect to the VPN to access a private application. We also have VPN as a service included in that. So now instead of connecting to a head-in at a branch location, a data center, or HQ, your users are connecting to a VPN head-in in our cloud. And all of your branch locations, all of your cloud environments are connected to that same cloud, allowing your users to pretty much connect to any network and get access to all the resources they need access to. And again, that's under one unified dashboard, a policy where you're able to configure those identity-based controls. You're able to do some posturing, and keeping everyone secure, but also just taking a load off your shoulders where you don't have to worry about maintenance on those headends. Cisco take care of that for you. So yes, that is our SSE solution that I am super excited about, been waiting on, and glad that we're finally here to showcase that product.
Yeah, from my perspective, right, the client that plugs right into that is Cisco Secure Client, which delivers modular capabilities across the endpoint visibility stack, right? It could be EDR needs, it could be NVM for the network visibility module that gives us connections between processes that are launched, user information, and the traffic initiated out of those processes or received by those processes. It's the detail of those individual hosts that are going to be used for these, just workday connections. And it is, it's no longer just kind of the new reality. It's just reality at this point. Users are going to be everywhere and they're going to need and want to work from everywhere. And so SSE enables that, and getting protection all the way down to the endpoint happens through Secure Client, which then makes things like EDR, NVM, and other capabilities across the endpoint visibility stack available. So for us, it's kind of a no-brainer, right? Do the SSE stuff because you're going to need endpoint visibility anyway. Start where you understand, which is typically the network for most of our customers and users. Get those protections built out as they're needed. And when you're ready, start lighting up the modules inside of Secure Client that give you the deeper visibility, that last line of protection, et cetera.
Excellent.
That was great. I don't know, Mike. We learned so much today. It's
Yes,
been
I know I
hard.
have.
It's gonna be hard to summarize the whole thing, but yeah, it's a lot of information. But I know we have just few minutes on the clock, and just wanna open it up for our super fun lightning round. We actually have a couple questions for each of you. Hopefully those are fun, and I'm gonna start with you, Chad. This one, it's interesting. What's been more frustrating for you, the Carolina Panthers season or Cisco license? What do you think, where you put them?
I would have to say the Carolina Panthers letting me down this season has been super frustrating. I travel down to Charlotte for every home game, and that trip to travel down there just to lose is getting rough. So I would say the Panthers have made my Mondays rough. But I'm on the Cisco licensing side. We've done a lot to improve licensing. I know we've been listening to our customers and the struggles with licensing, but it seems like Cisco has that corrected. I just need to get my Panthers on board and correct that football team.
All right, great. And Eric, let's get on to a really serious topic here. Other than microchips, what is another favorite food of malware?
I saw this and I have no idea. I struggled with like how to answer this one. I didn't know if I needed to try to find some way to be serious and make it and continue the analogy and start talking about ransomware and connecting that to like a buffet or something like that, right? What gets held hostage at restaurants, that kind of stuff. I don't know. I don't know what other than microchips. I'm gonna ask you, I'm gonna flip it back on you, Mike. Other than
All right.
microchips, what is another favorite food of
Oh
malware?
man, I can't believe this is happening. I'm also not prepared. I'll go with
Hey, cookies.
I think that Cookies. That's a good
That's
one.
a good one.
No,
That's a good one.
because everybody loves cookies, and you know that's what the attackers are going to go after. What am I going to pay the most for to get those back? And
That's
that's
a good one. That is a real good one.
all right. We probably got time for one more each, Andres.
All right, so this one, hopefully I don't butcher this one, but probably will do. Is it true that hackers enjoy gardening? After all, they love planting mower. What do you think about that, Chad?
That's a good one. That's true. They love playing a mower, so they are good at gardening in a sense.
So I don't want to do my own gardening, but I don't want those hackers come here planting malware. So I'm gonna have to find an alternative. Eric, if your specific computer or maybe keyboard could talk, what would it say about you?
This guy loves honey barbecue Frito twists. That's what it would say. Those Frito twists have me in a chokehold right now. And I don't know if you guys have ever had them. Honey barbecue
For
Frito
sure.
twists, right?
For sure. Yep.
And my keyboard would say, this guy really loves honey barbecue Frito twists.
Great.
And it would be great if he ran a vacuum over me every once in a while. So.
Oh, love it. Love it. Okay. Well, we could go on with dad jokes all day. Maybe we'll do an episode just on that. But anyway, let's go ahead, Andres. Let's summarize this up and get out of here.
I got
Okay.
one if you got 30
Yeah,
seconds
go.
for me.
Yes,
So,
sir.
and this is for anybody that wants to answer. Why did the scarecrow get promoted?
Nope.
He was outstanding in his field. Played on his field.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Love it. Love it. Very
Definitely gonna use
good.
that.
Very good. Very good.
That was good.
Well, we talked about a lot today. I know I have definitely learned a lot. Audrey's big takeaways for me, the endpoint being the device and the user. You know, thinking about maybe posture assessment of the device and then maybe MFA of the user. So it was cool hearing your perspective, Eric, on the history of the endpoint, how that's kind of evolved over time. Chad, good examples of the bad guys are in action. Major criminal groups that are well funded. And Eric, to your point, you know, they're also thinking about the MITRE ATT&CK framework. Like, how do we evade detection? So just that back and forth struggle there. And then MITRE being, you know, that tactics, techniques, and procedure. What's the bad guy's goal? How are they attacking? And then kind of what tools are they using? Especially with threats being more sophisticated than ever. You know, we talk about maybe moving that security in a layered approach. So those were my big takeaways, Andres.
Yeah, for me, a few things that really resonate. I know, Chad, you mentioned a few examples about securing beyond the endpoint. For example, keeping an eye on a network detection solution, keeping an eye on that traffic coming in from endpoints that we cannot install an EDR solution. That was very key, and it resonates with a lot of things that people is doing today. Eric, you had a really good analogy on the cartography of the network, of all the things that we need to see before we can decide we're gonna protect. So that was great for helping everybody just to make sure that they know where to start from, they know what the moving targets are, define the undefined on the network. So that was pretty cool. Asset inventory, that's one of the things that nobody likes, but
Gotta
it's
do it.
needed. It's needed.
Yep.
You gotta do it. Absolutely. Chad, the other thing, zero trust, wired, wireless, VPN. You put in some information about Cisco ICE. That is great. Actually, I love that. And then also the expansion that we got to talk about, the user protection suite. What are the things that are included there? How it can help our customers? And last, Eric, you mentioned that integration between products. A good example, Umbrella and Duo, the endpoint protection. That was great. Mike, give it back to you. Great to meet
Cool.
you as always.
All right. Well, Don't forget to fill out that feedback survey, because even though I can't win the Cisco hoodie, I want, someone to win the Cisco hoodie. So fill out that survey right after the call, and then we will reach out to you through email if you are the winner. Huge thank you to our guests, Eric, Chad. It's been an absolute pleasure. I would love, Andres, and I would love to have you back on the show. The next call will be December 13th, and it's on securing the cloud. So that's going to be an outstanding conversation there. Stay secure, and we will see you in December. Thanks, everybody.
Hey, folks. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.